Here is a brief summary and a final challenge to part one, Find Your Voice, which is the first half of Habit 8. As we approach the end of this section on finding your voice, let's go back and reconnect with our main purposes. We know that there is a painful gap between possessing great potential and actually realizing a life of greatness and contribution. Between being aware of tremendous problems and challenges in the workplace and developing the internal power and moral authority to break out of those problems and become a significant creative force in solving them. I commend to you again this simple way of thinking about life, this simple paradigm. A whole person, body, mind, heart, and spirit, with four basic needs: to live, to learn, to love, to leave a legacy, and four intelligences or capacities, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and their highest manifestations, discipline, vision, passion, and conscience, all of which represent the four dimensions of voice: need, talent, passion, and conscience. So you'll notice the basic underlying paradigm simply adds one word as we explore the different dimensions we have been discussing. As we respect, develop, integrate, and balance these intelligences in their highest manifestations, the synergy between them lights the fire within us, and we find our voice. You may be interested to know that I first introduced the idea and language of the fire within in the book First Things First, co-authored with Roger and Rebecca Merrill. Years later, the Salt Lake Organizing Committee for the 2002 Winter Olympics called me requesting permission to use as a central theme of the 2002 Games, Light the Fire Within. Without hesitation, I said, of course, we would be honored. I was inspired and thrilled to see how they used the Light the Fire Within theme to portray the magnificent potential of the human spirit. Several weeks after the Games, the Salt Lake Olympic Committee President, Mitt Romney, told me that it's the first time he knows of in the history of the Olympic Games that the organizers were successfully able to create a lasting, identifying theme that actually took hold in the hearts and minds of the athletes, volunteers, and worldwide viewers. In Chapter 1, I suggested that voice lies at the nexus of talent, your natural gifts and strengths, passion, those things that naturally energize, excite, motivate, and inspire you, need, including what the world needs enough to pay you for, and conscience, that still small voice within that assures you of what is right and that prompts you to actually do it. I also said that when you engage in work, professional, community, and family, that taps your talent and fuels your passion, that rises out of a great need in the world that you feel drawn by conscience to meet, therein lies your voice, your calling, your soul's code, your personal DNA. Perhaps you have noticed the similarity between these four dimensions of voice and the four personal leadership attributes of vision, discipline, passion, and conscience. Two of the terms, passion and conscience, are identical. These four dimensions of voice, that is, passion, talent, need, and conscience, are beautifully illustrated in the story of Muhammad Yunus. How did he find his voice? First, he sensed the need. The voice of conscience inspired him to take action. Since his talent matched the need, he disciplined his talent to provide a solution. The work involved in the solution not only drew upon his talent, but it also tapped his passion. Out of need grew vision, vision to multiply the capacity of people and institutions to meet similar needs around the world, and thereby inspire them to find their voice. With the end to part one, Find Your Voice, I extend to you a promise and a challenge. My promise is this: if you will apply these four capacities, talent, passion, need, and conscience, to any role of your life, you can find your voice in that role. My simple challenge, take two or three of the primary roles in your life, and in each role, ask yourself the following four questions. First, what need do I sense in your family, your community, your organization you work for? Second, do I possess a true talent that, if disciplined and applied, can meet the need? Third, does the opportunity to meet the need tap into my passion? And fourth, does my conscience inspire me to take action and become involved? If you can answer all four questions in the affirmative and will make a habit of developing a plan of action and then going to work on it, I guarantee you will begin to find your true voice in life, a life of deep meaning, satisfaction, and greatness. In a very real sense, you will be creating your voice. Now let's look at some question and answers. And these questions deal with some very, very practical issues that people are facing on a regular basis. And you can see how this paradigm, this thinking, can apply. Here's a question. Could this approach to personal leadership help me solve one of my lifelong challenges, losing weight and staying in shape? My answer is, if you're like most people, you've resolved from time to time to get into shape, and in most cases, this usually involved losing some weight. Oftentimes, getting into shape merely means replacing fat with muscle, which may actually increase your weight since muscle weighs about twice as much as fat. Nevertheless, our fundamental task is to get into shape and become physically healthy, strong, and fit. That is the vision. What is the discipline? Usually it involves a strict regimen of exercise, proper nutrition, rest, and stress management. Passion represents the depth of feeling, the emotional commitment, and the drive. Conscience provides the why, the reason, the worthy causes of being healthy so that you can live longer, provide for your family properly, help raise your grandchildren, or simply feel better. You'll also find that if the motivation is only external, that is, looking better, vanity, a change of season, New Year's resolution time, etc., etc., such motivation will often lose its power and fail to sustain itself because the cause is not worthy of such a total commitment. Before making a bad food choice, train yourself to inwardly say, "My temptation is emotional, and resisting will further my needed weight loss and strengthen my character. Furthermore, nothing tastes as good as thin feels." It is very common to become discouraged by the cycle of setting a goal to lose weight and then abandoning it within days or even hours. Many complained, "I'm just not disciplined." My experience is that the biggest problem is not the discipline. It's not that we have not yet paid the price with vision. We're also not yet connected with our deepest values and motivations, our conscience, with those things most important to us. Let me illustrate with the experience of a friend of mine. He said this, "I had been working very hard on my career. By the time I turned 45, I was quite successful. I was also about 60 pounds overweight, a compulsive eater during times of stress, and one who didn't have time to exercise regularly because of work. On his fifth birthday, my son Logan gave me a book on healthy living. Inside, his mother had helped him write the following words, 'Daddy, for my birthday this year, I want you to be healthy. I want you to be around a while.' Talk about a punch in the gut. Ouch. That plea from my son changed my perspective on my lifestyle completely. The eating and the lack of regular physical exercise weren't just my individual choice anymore. I saw suddenly that I was creating a very unhealthy legacy for my children. I was modeling for them that one's body was unimportant, that self-control was unimportant, and that the only thing worth working hard for in this life was money and prestige. I realized that my stewardship to my children involved more than just providing for their physical, financial, and emotional needs. It also involved providing healthy role models on which they could pattern their lives. I had not been doing that. So I committed myself to being healthy for my children, not to losing weight, but to being healthy. That's the key for me. My commitment had to be to something that held real value for me. I had tried so many diets and exercise programs before. Normally, I would be fine until stresses happened in my life. To have losing weight as my inspiring motivation was simply not enough. But my children are significant enough. I care enough about them that I can choose to make healthy decisions. I established as a goal for myself that I wanted to be healthy. I wanted to be vital, to have energy to play with my kids after work, to be able to play in the company softball tournament without getting winded on the way to first base. As a way to reach that goal, I implemented a diet and exercise program. The key here is that the diet and exercise program was not the goal. Being healthy for my children was. I decided to share my goal with somebody else who wanted to be healthy. We now work together on an exercise program. I made sure I set aside time for me to accomplish my goals. I learned to know when to stop working and when to pay attention to the needs of my body. It has been 2 years since I changed my way of thinking. I don't struggle anymore to get out of bed. Exercise has almost become second nature. I don't talk myself out of my exercise program like I did at the beginning. Sure, there are still days that I don't do too well. I think I'm tired, I think my hamstring is strained, I have a headache, it's too hot. Some days I plain talk myself out of running. But it's so much easier now for me to get back on track. Because I have this larger goal, this greater commitment to somebody I love more than myself, I can get right back on track. Another question that many people are asking, what about getting a job? My answer is, getting into shape is primarily an independent effort. Getting the job you want is primarily a highly interdependent effort. And it relies on effective development of influence with other people. Now let's think through how to get the job you want by looking at the same four attributes of personal influence: vision, discipline, passion, and conscience. Again, the key is all four. Neglect any one of them, and you'll find it much more difficult to get the job you want. And if you do get it, you will likely not be able to sustain what you committed to and what it requires of you. Now, let's just assume that there's a very soft job market and that most employers are letting people go, not hiring, particularly in the industry and the city where you want to live and work. How do you get the job that you want? First of all, let's start with vision. You need to know what the job is that you want. Use discipline to figure out what the job actually entails. Use discipline to understand the job, to understand the organization you want to be employed by, to understand the unique requirements of the job, and to understand the marketplace so that you understand the forces that are in place, including competition, customers' wants and needs, and the characteristics and trends in that industry. In other words, pay the price to understand the challenges and problems faced by the organization you want to join. Next, identify where your passion is. That is, does this job uniquely reflect your talent, gifts, interests, capabilities, and skills? If so, does your conscience tell you that this is a job worthy of being committed to? If so, can you envision yourself working in this manner? Now, after you've done all this preliminary work using vision, discipline, passion, and conscience, you are ready to go to the job interview. But this time, you don't go as a problem for the interviewer to deal with, but as a solution to the problems that decision makers are facing. You see the difference? You are a problem solver, because you understand the nature of those problems. When you show an understanding of their most significant problems better than most of the people in their present employ, when you show a passion and commitment to meet their situation better than most of the people, you give yourself a tremendous advantage. Suggest, if necessary, even a trial period, even at your own expense, until they become convinced that you are a better solution to their problem than anyone else that they're looking at, or than many that they may already have in their employ. simply because you are a leader. You take initiative to make good things happen. You don't wait to be told. You're not always being acted upon. You act, but you're not foolish in your action. You are very aware. You are very sensitive. You are very empathic and respectful. You also engage in this job-finding process in a principled way. There is no exaggeration for effect, no deceit, no manipulation, no lying, no cheating, no duplicity, or putting other people down. You become very focused on the organization's needs, their concerns, their problems, and on their customers' needs, concerns, and problems. You talk that language, the language of their problems and the language of their customers' problems. If you're a father, the way I reach your heart is to talk about your children. Similarly in business, you talk about your customers' customers. Anyone that will take such an approach with the decision maker will get attention. In fact, in most cases, it will blow them away with the depth of your preparation and discipline and your willingness to pay the price and sacrifice. You know, I've given this counsel over and over and over again to so many people through the years, and only a small percentage would take it. But in almost every case, they succeeded in getting the job they wanted, to live where they wanted to live. I also usually recommend that they study the latest edition of the book, What Color Is Your Parachute? By Richard Bowles, to help them better understand this process. But it is a clear illustration of how vision, discipline, passion, and conscience applies in securing the job you want.
You have reached the end of this CD. To continue the program, please insert the next CD.